Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the findings of the 2023 Greenhouse Gas Emissions Inventory Report.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The 2023 Greenhouse Gas Emissions Inventory Reports were presented to Council at their meeting this week, showing the city's progress in reducing emissions and adding some new data to the mix. The reports presented showed a 5.4% reduction in community emissions from the base year of 2018. In corporate emissions, meaning those created by municipal operations, there was a 19% decrease. The 2023 inventory also provided per capita reporting for the first time to, quote, provide a deeper understanding of which reduction efforts have the greatest potential impact as the city's population grows, end quote. As a whole, the community achieved a reduction of 11.5% per capita. This amounts to a 60,563-ton reduction. The largest emission reductions in both the corporate and community reports were seen in transportation and transit, with transportation emissions dropping by 7.4% community-wide. This was attributed to the city putting focus on initiatives like adding more electric vehicles to the fleet and biodiesel used in transit buses in place of regular diesel fuel, as well as circumstances like remote work and the increased efficiency of vehicles. However, the year was not without challenges. Emissions from water and wastewater services increased by 22.4% and 15.4% respectively from 2022 to 2023 alone, a significant rise compared to other sectors. According to the report, the increase is likely a symptom of broader climate change challenges, such as more frequent rainstorms, as well as a rise in demand due to population growth. Population growth also tempered the total emissions reductions. The report states that, quote, future strategies will need to focus on more aggressive measures to ensure that reductions are achieved both in total emissions and on a per capita basis, end quote. The impact of the province's increased reliance on natural gas on local reduction efforts was also pointed out in the report. Nathan Mannion with GreenScale Incorporated, who prepared the reports, spoke to this issue before council.
The electricity emissions went up in the province because over the last several years or last few years, increasing electricity demand has been met with increased electricity production from natural gas as opposed to some of the cleaner sources that was being used in 2018. So this is where most of that's coming from, and we expect the province to continue to meet that demand with more natural gas. So we expect that emission factor to increase over the next few years as well, up until about 2040.
Emissions from Ontario's electricity grid are more than 50% higher in 2023 than in 2018. The increase in carbon intensity of Ontario's electricity grid has significantly reduced the impact of energy efficiency efforts at the municipal level, creating challenges for the city in meeting their climate goals. In January 2024, Council was presented with a report showing that the city fell significantly short of its 2022 greenhouse gas reduction goals, achieving an 8% reduction with a target of 15%. This announcement caused environmental advocates to urge the city to set and reach more ambitious targets. The city referenced this shortcoming, stating, quote, given that the corporate target of a 15% reduction from 2018 levels by 2022 was missed, significant action is required, end quote. The city's 2030 emissions reduction goal is to reach 30% below 2018 levels and carbon neutrality by 2040. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC for that story. Up next is Dinah Jansen with an update on the Dr. Elaine Ma OHIP dispute from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell.
Thank you, Jesse. The story of Dr. Elaine Ma has caused concern locally and nationally. Ma, who ran a number of mass vaccination clinics in Kingston at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, has been told she must give back $600,000 she received to cover the costs of these clinics because the work was administered in part by medical students and outside of the walls of a doctor's office. Since then, she has gained the support of local colleagues and the Kingston Frontenac Lennox and Addington Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Piotr Oglaza. However, in conjunction with local support, came some comments from the Ministry of Health. On Wednesday, October 30th, Hannah Jensen, Communications Director for Minister Sylvia Jones, responded to press inquiries via email. In the response, Jones made a number of statements, chief among them that Dr. Ma had pocketed the remaining amount of money given for the clinics. The Kingston-based doctor addressed the accusation leveled by the Ministry of Health through a spokesperson. Ma refuted Jensen's claim and explained that billing codes were provided, the clinics were held, and those billing codes were submitted for pay. Ma pointed out that the services she provided with her vaccine clinics led to hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars worth of cost-saving measures by prevention. At the HSARB hearing, Ma said OHIP focused most of its arguments on the 2001 info bulletin's definitions of employee and workspace. Because of this decades-old memo, Ma's use of Queen's medical students to vaccinate people at clinics didn't occur in her office, which meant she had not followed agreed-upon standards. The OHIP hearing focused on 2001 definitions despite new pandemic-related rules being issued in 2021. The Kingstonists could not find the ministerial order given in 2021, although a copy of it from the Minister of Health's office was requested multiple times, but there were numerous OHIP info bulletins issued by the Ministry of Health to physicians in 2021. One of them explains that physicians providing COVID-19 vaccination services at a ministry-designated COVID-19 assessment center or mass vaccination site may claim the temporary sessional codes for remuneration. As to using medical students to administer thousands of injections under her supervision, Ma pointed out that as part of Ontario's Employee Standards Act, one of the definitions of an employee is a person who receives training from a person who is an employer if the skill is in which the person is being trained is a skill used by the employer's employees. The fact that the OHIP definitions do not match the Employee Standards Act, the current definition provided by the Ontario government, seemed to make no difference at the hearings, Ma said, nor did the fact that the work was done in a time of global emergency. Ma noted that she had spoken to Premier Doug Ford in September and that she felt confident that something would be done within a week or so. However, it was not to be. Still, Ma is grateful for the public and her colleagues' responses and support. Dr. Piotr Oglaza went to the hearings in Toronto to also show his support for Ma. Ma said Oglaza was significantly cut off from speaking at the hearing. Oglaza wanted to talk about the context of the phone calls with retired General Rick Hillier, who chaired the COVID-19 Vaccine Distribution Task Force. Ma claimed that she was told to get it done and the provincial government would make it right. Ma remains dismayed. This issue has far-reaching implications beyond just financial ones, as MPP Ted Hsu noted when reached for comment. There is a deeper issue here, he said. In the next public health emergency, and they are surely coming, do you want our doctors worried about a fight with OHIP and fair payment for work done? Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a report from the LGI reporter for YGK News Owen Fullerton that provides an update on Canada post-strike actions.
Thank you, Dinah. Striking postal workers and supporters from the community and other local unions held a rally in front of Canada Post's downtown Kingston location last week as the strike action hit its fifth day. There are roughly 180 striking members of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, CUPW, and president of Local 556, Tim Ashworth, says they're primarily fighting for fair wage increases in a new contract. He says, while Canada Post says they've offered a raise that is in line with the current rate of inflation, members feel they still have some catching up to do. Additionally, Ashworth says the bargaining team wants to protect pension plans for future employees, something that has not been guaranteed by their employer, and union members don't want to work on a, quote, divided floor. Talks between Canada Post and the union resumed Monday last week with a federally appointed mediator, however, the two sides are still believed to be far apart. The two sides, however, have essentially entered into a truce to ensure Canadians continue to receive socioeconomic checks like disability payments, CPP payments, and employment insurance. Canada Post warned Canadians late last week to expect service delays due to the strike. Earlier this year, Canada Post announced it had lost $748 million as an organization in 2023, placing the blame largely on high labor costs concurrent with a surge in parcel delivery competition. CUPW doesn't agree with that fact, and notes that from 2017, non-labor spending ballooned by 55.5%, while wages grew at just 14% over that period. People in Kingston and across the country were given 3 days' notice of the strike action. The implications have been wide-reaching for organizations, businesses, and people that depend on Canada Post, and many still have questions about how far the impact goes. The City of Kingston has offered guidance on what to do during a postal disruption, including how to pay bills and parking tickets. The closer the strike stretches to Christmas, the more complications will arise with parcel delivery. Tim Ashworth says the timing of the labor action wasn't a designed play by the union, but rather, he says, Canada Post are the ones responsible for the delay.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about the Lennox and Addington Activation Fund.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. The county's Naturally L&A Activation Fund, which funds new and existing events and products in the county, has an all-new set of guidelines this year. With dedicated marketing support as a highlight, there were also other major changes made to the program. General program guidelines have been changed to reflect a different set of eligible projects, as well as offering a continuous intake period. Staff noted that by providing dedicated marketing support, narrowing the project focus, and extending the intake period, the program will provide a better potential return on investment for both project organizers and the county. Director of Community and Development Services Stephen Paul explains the history of the program.
Our activation program's been going for a number of years where we have $40,000 that's split evenly amongst our four municipalities, $10,000 per. And we've been providing funding to help with new events, recreational products and activities, cultural products, beautification. There's quite a wide range of that.
Paul gave a breakdown of the new marketing support.
We would fund up to $5,000, and using this as an example, so if it's a $5,000 project, 80% would go directly to the project to help with their event and all the different aspects of what that might be. And then 20%, so $1,000, if we're looking at a $5,000 program, would be held back, and we would actually do marketing support directly for that event or that tourism product on their behalf.
Paul explains why marketing support was a focus for staff.
One of the things that we have found with these projects that we've funded is that the marketing is sometimes not as strong as what we would wish it to be. And the Activation Fund really is about getting new products in our marketplace, but also really trying to enhance our Naturally L&A brand. So we feel if we invest 20% of that funding, that will go a long ways in trying to bring new people, new visitors, and enhance our brand within Lennox-Addington County.
Paul breaks down the changes to eligible applicants.
We want to fine-tune the categories that would be eligible for funding to new events, existing events, new tourism products, and tourism project enhancements only. And in reality, that's what the lion's share of all the applications that have been approved over the years really fall within those four categories.
Paul describes how the new continuous intake period will work.
We would just have an open application process. We wouldn't do strictly one per year. We would ask that all applications are submitted at least 3 months prior to the event or the product launch. And then from there, we would go until the $40,000 is depleted. Or if we have money left over, we'd roll that into the following year as well.
Warden John Wise showed his support for the new changes.
I think those refinements are good, the marketing one in particular. It's pretty critical.
Council unanimously voted to carry the motion.
We need a mover to note and receive and to move that the activation program be revised by narrowing the project focus, providing dedicated marketing support, and offering a continuous intake period. Councillor Davis and Councillor Hogg, all in favor? Carried. Thank you.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE-FM, Brenda Little, with a story about the outstanding achievements of a small rural school in Prince Edward County.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
It's the little school that could. Sophiasburg Central is a tiny rural school in Demarettsville, Prince Edward County. There are only 7 classrooms and 156 students who attend that school. Some time ago, the students were inspired by a presentation given by Earth Rangers, and they decided to take on the Battery Blitz Challenge that is sponsored by Call to Recycle. 88 other elementary schools from across Ontario took part in the contest to see who could collect the most used batteries in a month. With the help of family, friends, and the entire community, Sophiasburg collected 821 kilograms of used batteries, winning the contest hands down. Principal Carla McFarland and teacher Sarah Freeland chatted about the project.
So how many people are involved with this project?
It was the principal, myself, and then all of the students, the parents, the community, the teachers. It was really a whole community and school-wide effort. We reached out to Inquity News, and they put an article out to encourage people to collect batteries. I as well went on Facebook and posted to my friends and asked everyone to please share it. And then with the community, it just kind of got around by word of mouth. So everyone kind of went home, told their parents told their friends, and it kind of just spread like wildfire. It was just amazing. I knew we'd collected a lot of batteries, and I was so proud of everyone, but I was like, there's no way we compete against schools that have 600 kids, but... We did, and we beat them by a lot.
And we're rural, too, right? So it's not as easy for people to just stop by the school and drop off batteries. They've got to, you know, get in the car and drive. It's not 2 kilometers down the road. It's a distance for people to come and drop off their batteries. So it's really great that, you know, the county really pulled together for seven classrooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was even a community member, Mr. Matthews, came with, like a half-ton truckload of batteries.
Yeah, we had people like every day dropping batteries off. It was pretty amazing.
How did you find out about this program?
I was just looking up science things with my kids, and I found the like Earth Rangers website, and I saw that they had a battery challenge. So I was like, let's compete. So Earth Rangers is a program that works with students to get them involved in being Earth Rangers. So it's about preserving the environment and protecting our animals. It's a really cool organization, and I know a lot of kids in my class went home and downloaded the app and was playing the game. And we've even heard kids at recess saying that they want to be an Earth Ranger when they grow up and they want to save the planet. So it's a really cool organization.
And we were just talking about it last night when I was meeting with some school council parents, and the children are super excited when they get their little membership card in the mail. And, you know, they have little things and challenges, and they've got little vlogs for kids of other kids and the things that they're doing to help protect the environment, and little changes that they can make that are easily attainable and easily doable. So the kids are really buying into that. They're excited. Probably the Earth Rangers presentation, the live presentation that they did, was probably one of the most engaging presentations I've ever seen for students. And it was engaging from kindergarten's rate to grade 8. And it was about 45 minutes in length, and the kids were captivated the entire time, which is pretty remarkable for any kind of presentation. You know, you start to see the squirming and some kids lose interest. Not in this one. It was so well done, so well planned and thought out, and really captivated the kids.
Call to Recycle is the leading national consumer battery recycling organization, and they partner with Earth Rangers for the Battery Blitz events that are held twice per year. Principal Carla McFarland tells us more.
They, in conjunction with Earth Rangers, kind of host the Battery Blitz all over Canada. So there's several provinces that they're involved with, and they run the challenge and provide the collection boxes, things like that, and they're the ones that pick up the batteries afterwards and weigh, and then, you know, determine what weight each school brought in and then determine the winners from there.
Sophiasburg School won $5,000 from Call to Recycle, and the money will go towards upgrading their playground. For the Local Journalism Initiative, FrequencyNews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the new Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about the planned purchase of the Biddy Creek wetlands by the Northumberland Land Trust.
The Northumberland Land Trust is raising money to purchase a large wetland near Brighton. The Land Trust is fundraising $190,000 by January to buy the Biddy Creek property, a 300-acre parcel just south of Highway 401. Doug McRae, a board member with the Northumberland Land Trust, says the Biddy Creek property is unique, as it is a large, untouched wetland.
And this particular property, the wetland is almost entirely enclosed within the boundaries of it. And it essentially functions like almost like a closed ecosystem in its own right. And the middle of the property, the bulk of the property, is a giant bog. And it's just this giant open wetland, and the trees rise up on the side, starting small, getting bigger as it gets drier.
The Northumberland Land Trust is partnering with Ducks Unlimited Canada to purchase the Biddy Creek wetland from the county, as this will be their first land purchase. McRae explains the Land Trust acquires its properties through donations from area landowners. He says some of the money raised through the fundraising efforts will go to detailed biological studies of what is contained in the wetland. The property comprises of two parcels of land that have limited accessibility. A regionally important wetland makes up 60 to 70% of the property, while significantly mixed woodlands comprising of black cherry, oak, birch, maple, cedar, and white pine make up a portion of the eastmost parcel.
So the Biddy Creek wetland is a very large, undisturbed piece of property. It's just over 300 acres directly south of the 401. I mean, the 401 bisects it, actually. And it's sort of astounding that we have what it almost amounts to a wilderness site right beside the 401.
Those interested in donating to the purchase of the property or learning more about the Biddy Creek wetland can visit the Northumberland Land Trust website. For CFNW News and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones of CFWN Coburg for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell for the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Thursday, November 28th. We had a daytime high of 4 degrees and a 40% chance of mixed precipitation. That's a mix of rain and possibly snow at times, dropping down to -1 overnight with a 40% chance of snow. Minor flurries, thankfully. Friday, November 29th, that 40% chance of flurries maintains, and it's a daytime high of 2, dropping down another 2 degrees to be -3 overnight. Saturday, November 30th, looking like the chilliest day so far here in the city of Kingston, a daytime high of 1 degree with a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day. Sunday, December 1st, we're going to have a daytime high of 1, -4 overnight. And then starting off the new work week, Monday, December 2nd, we're going to be hovering around that 0-degree mark. And that's a wrap on your Environment Canada weather report for the city of Kingston. Now over to CFRC for your weekly concert and events calendar.
And now it's time for CFRC's community events calendar for the week.
On Thursday, November 28th, the Kingston Meistersingers are thrilled to present the musical Bonnie and Clyde, the true crime story of Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow. The show will run for 10 performances from November 21st to December 1st at the newly opened Sesame Theater, located in the new French High School behind the Rio Can. Also on Thursday, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. And of course, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, November 29th, get ready for a vibrant night of Latin rhythms at the Grad Club. Join us from 8 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. for an unforgettable dance event featuring salsa, timba, bachata, merengue, and reggaeton across two floors of non-stop music. Tickets available online through Eventbrite and at the door. On Saturday, November 30th, the Independent Wrestling Academy proudly presents Wrestling School of Rock. This family-friendly professional wrestling event is being held in the upper hall of the Spire on 82 Sydenham Street, and a portion of all proceeds goes directly to CFRC 101.9 FM's funding drive. Doors open at 5 p.m., show begins at 5:30. Tickets available online through iwacanada.ca, but a select number of tickets will also be available at the doors for $20. Also on Saturday, November 30th, celebrate 20 years of She Sings Women's Choir with a free show at Chalmers United Church on 212 Berry Street. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. and runs until 9:30 p.m. And finally, on Sunday, December 1st, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. That's a wrap for the community events calendar. Have a concert or event you would like to add to our online calendar? Reach out today via CFRC.ca and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRCMusic.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.